There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. This is our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Tuesday, October the 22nd.
We're talking email and we're asking, could blocking access to emails outside of work rather than reducing stress actually cause more stress? Our producer Shruti Rajendran has this report.
You've got mail.
New University of Sussex research has found that while a ban could help some staff switch off, it could also stop people achieving work goals, causing stress. In 2017, France introduced a new labour law, making it illegal for employees to access emails once their working day had ended. Earlier this year, New York City discussed proposals to become the first city in the US to grant employees the right to disconnect after work. But now studies says these strict policies could be harmful to employees with high levels of anxiety as they feel they need to respond to the growing numbers in their inbox. Some researchers are also suggesting that a one-size-fits-all approach should be avoided. Companies to have restricted email use include German car maker Volkswagen and Belgian supermarket chain Lidl.
Here in the Business Breakfast studio, bizarrely, you and I are both in favour of 24/7 email. Why are you voting for that?
I'm voting for that because I suppose you and I are probably not the most avid emailers in the world. But I do think you can't take away the ability to do that, because for just taking something away from many people will make them wonder what's in that inbox. If you can't do it, you're going to want to do it. And one of the problems is that the brain tends to ignore all of the very nice mail emails. But if there's one slightly edgy, slightly trolly remark in an email, that's the one you're going to remember. That's the one that's going to stop you sleeping at night. And I suppose it's really the same as social media, isn't it? You remember the trolls and the nasty stuff rather than the good stuff.
Well, Dr. David Lee is a psychologist, a consultant clinical psychologist to be precise, at the American Center for Psychiatry and Neurology here in Dubai. We asked Dr. Lee, what's the psychology behind employees accessing their emails post-work hours?
It really depends on the individual. I mean, for some individuals, they need absolute compartmentalization between their work life and their home life, so they can actually switch off, so that they can leave work at work. You know, when they leave the office, they can go home, completely switch off and relax. But other individuals work much more flexibly and need to do that for their own kind of state of well-being. They need to be able to respond to work as and when. And of course, it also depends not just on individual personality, but also the nature of the job role.
We've also getting the perspective of Charlotte Shedderville, who's with the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development here in the Middle East. And like me and Malcolm, she's in favour of personally having the ability to access your emails outside of working hours. We asked her why.
I personally like to manage my own workload. So for me, being able to check my emails perhaps over the weekend, we also work internationally a lot in the region. So being able to catch up with the UK on Fridays is sometimes helpful. It helps me get stuff done that I would normally take a lot longer if I had to wait until Monday.
And she went on to say this.
Systematically banning employees from accessing their emails out of office is not necessarily a good thing. It can increase stress. The key is to allowing them without expecting employees to access their emails outside of working hours. And that's a very tricky balancing act there for line managers in HR.
Wace has been in touch and he says he's in favour of switching off and the emails should also be concise.
First of all, I think that the emails shouldn't be used for 24/7. There should be restriction on the times because obviously you have your own life or responsibilities which needs to be fulfilled. On the other hand, the emails should be smart, sweet and short. What exactly I mean is that email contains a subject, a body and a conclusion. So we should not write an email as a novel or something which people don't understand.
Awais, we need to make you the head of the email police, I think. Short and sweet and concise.
There's a great memo that the wartime leader Winston Churchill wrote in 1940 at the height of the Battle of Britain. And he sent out a memo to everyone in the army and the government saying, we need to keep our correspondence concise because all this waffle is getting in the way of the war. So Awais, you, Winston Churchill, good on you.
And then he wrote speeches that were 20 minutes longer than they needed to be. Amar says past experience has taught him not to keep his phone on.
I used to work in a compliance service provider
where some clients used to call like as early as 4 o'clock in the morning, and some clients used to call even late. My previous boss used to ask me to answer emails even at 11 p.m. or even calling me that late. Now I'm working for one of my clients at that time. After working hours, like 5 o'clock or something, I don't check the emails. I even don't answer the office calls. I even switch off the working mobile. So I believe I don't agree with that study where people are stressed because they are not checking their work emails, because nowadays we need some peace of mind. We need to be disconnected to connect with the real world.
I mean, that is the extreme example from Amar, and that does sound pretty unpleasant. Clients on the blower at 4:30, your boss in the morning, your boss on the phone at 11 o'clock at night, that's going to ruin your life.
Interesting to know what industry that would be in.
Well, then Krishna, and that's a very good point, because Krishna's also been in touch. Krishna Das says it does depend on the industry or the sector that you work in.
I work in insurance industry past 14 years. Sometimes I find it very useful, like of accessing emails after office hours also, because it's certain cases it's required to understand clients' requirements. Maybe clients are based across the globe and working maybe on a Friday where you are in a zone where Friday is a weekend.
Well, funny you mentioned that, Krishna. My car's been stuck in a workshop in Alcoz for the past week. Tried to get in touch with my insurance company at 5:05 last night. No, they've gone home.
Really?
Call again tomorrow. It's like, okay, fair enough. But another day in paradise for the car.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Very pleased to welcome to the studio David Lee, Dr. David Lee, consultant clinical psychologist at the American Centre for Psychiatry and Neurology here in Dubai. Morning to you.
Good morning, Malcolm.
We have been talking about the habit of some companies stopping people accessing their emails outside hours. And in other words, an hour after you finish work, hour before you start work, in those intervening times and at the weekends, you can't access your email. The idea that it will lead to better mental health for those people, that they're not working 24/7. But the alternative is even more unthinkable to many people. According to the University of Sussex in the UK, they say it actually, the inability to check your emails causes much more angst than if you're able to delve in and find out what's happening. Your view?
Yeah, well, I think it's a case of horses for courses. And I think this blanket rule of not being able to check your work emails outside of office hours, let's say, it's not a helpful one. You know, it depends on individual personality. And that's kind of what the study demonstrates, in a way, that for some people that creates much more stress. It can create anxiety. I mean, some people do have problems compartmentalizing their work life from their personal life, but that's not everybody. You know, we're evolving now in times, you know, in the digital era that we're in, technology is becoming progressively advanced. We have to have access to our emails outside of being in the office.
No, I mean, the brain tends to focus on the negative things more than the positive. Yeah. One negative comment on social media hurts a lot more than 20 positive ones.
Sure.
Is it the same thing, really, with not being able to access your emails? You're wondering if that one negative email is there, or one that's going to ask you for information that you can't provide. Why is that we focus on the negative rather than the positive?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're primed to do that. You know, as human beings, we've evolved as species. So actually what happens, it has a survival function. So we're always on the lookout for what we have to deal with next, what is, you know, stress related. Emails are a prime example of that, because we actually don't have control fully over the emails that we receive. So we're always preempting what emails are going to arrive in our inbox that day and how we're going to deal with it. And of course, you know, if we don't have access to those emails, that can lead to worry. Worry can lead to what we talk about as free-floating anxiety or generalized anxiety disorder, to take it to its extreme. So what we need to be careful of is that we don't create a culture where people are going home from work and constantly worrying throughout the night as to what emails that they'll receive the next morning that they haven't been able to deal with for, you know, the past 12, 14 hours.
Those two conditions that you mentioned there, what are the symptoms?
Well, generalized anxiety disorder, we talk about free-floating anxiety, so it's characterized by worry mainly. The physical symptoms that we talk about are tension within the body, generally heightened arousal, So, you know, at worst, it can lead to high blood pressure, hypertension, you know, all sorts of other ill effects. It's generally a state of being constantly anxious and constantly worrying, ruminating, not being able to switch off.
We've had lots of messages in, Dr. Lee. PJ writes in, echoing what you said, he says, I think accessing emails out of work hours should be up to the individual, not mandated by an employer. And he finishes by saying, time management, common sense and self-discipline are still valuable skills that lead to a well-balanced and managed life.
Yeah, I think there should be a caveat to that. Some individuals struggle, as I said earlier, to compartmentalise. So some people do need some help in that regard. They may need some coaching, for example, in terms of how to compartmentalise. What we don't want is people to be going home and working around the clock, constantly checking their emails, you know, getting up, you know, during the middle of the night, replying to emails and all these kind of things. That doesn't equate to good work-life balance. But sure, it is a case of horses for courses and different personality types as well.
Well, this is Amma, who got in touch earlier and wrote us an email saying that he was in the situation a while ago where he was being contacted at all hours of the day and night. It'd be interesting to get your thoughts and maybe advice to people who are in Amma's situation.
Sure. I used to work in a compliance service provider where some clients used to call like as early as 4 o'clock in the morning, and some clients used to call even late. My previous boss used to ask me to answer emails even at 11 p.m. or
11 p.m. emails from the boss and 4:30 calls from clients. How do you manage that?
Yeah, well, this is all about boundaries, you know, and it's difficult to set boundaries, but sometimes you have to be assertive to do that with your employer and sometimes with clients and customers as well, because otherwise we will work around the clock. It's very easy to say yes. It's very easy to get sucked into that kind of working pattern where you will just respond. It becomes extremely reactive. If people know what your boundaries are, if they know that they can't contact you at particular times, that are not suitable for you, say for example in the middle of the night, then they won't do that. But you need to kind of model that to people, you know, you need to kind of set that boundary.
We've got one message in saying accessing email outside of the office can provide an idea about your next day's load and sometimes gives you time to come up with a better solution. So this is an advocate for receiving emails outside of office hours.
Yeah, I think within boundaries, yeah. And I think this is where some people require, you know, some coaching to do that. Others are very, very good at it anyway. They can set themselves, say, 30 minutes to one side at the end of the day to have a check, you know, to manage the time for the next day. Being proactive isn't a bad thing, it's a good thing, but if it takes over your life completely and your personal life, of course, then we don't have any work-life balance.
Single people and married people may look at this in a very different way, and it's quite understandable that companies say, well, okay, you're married, you're going to have your time with your family, but if you're single, you could sit there worrying, couldn't you, about your emails and what's in them, and, you know, is it different, do you think, for people with, I was about to say life, that's a very wrong thing to say, with a family?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very, very different. If you've got a family, you know, you're going home, you maybe have that structure there already in place. You have to get the children ready for bed, let's say. You have to help out with dinner. If you're single, there's much more of a propensity to, you know, maybe to ruminate, to worry, or to kind of get into this free-floating anxiety we talked about before. But that's not to say that single people, you know, should work around the clock, that it's still important to have boundaries, and single people still have lives. You know, they do things above and beyond their work outside of office hours.
It's been great talking to you. Appreciate your time.
You're
Dr. David Lee is consultant clinical psychologist at the American Centre for Psychiatry and Neurology in Dubai.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
Pleasure to be joined in the Dubai Eye studio now by the anchor of CNN's Wall Street coverage, Julia Chatterley.
Thank you for having me here.
We'll get your thoughts on some of the big market stories at the moment. But first of all, your show on CNN, First Move, with Julia Chatterley, recently celebrated its first birthday, and this is what it sounds like.
This is First Move. Where do you see the greatest opportunities at this moment?
The greatest opportunities around the world, without doubt, are still in the United States.
You've had great earnings, a great response from investors as well. Can we say it's cloud nine, or is that number not big enough?
Yeah, no, I'll take any cloud.
That was Julia speaking with Ginny Romity, you just heard then, the head of IBM.
Let's look at some of the big Wall Street stories. And for us, covering it from afar, the big story of the past month has been the IPO that wasn't WeWork and the whole debacle over unicorn valuations. How have you been covering that one?
I mean, this is a fascinating story of a multi-billion dollar firm that a lot of people, I think, from the sidelines would look at and say, isn't this just a big real estate company? And when we saw the prospectus for their hopeful IPO and they'd given, 15 different suggestions of what this company was, I think a lot of people then went, hang on a second. But, you know, we've seen a number of these companies come to markets, Lyft, Uber, and not been performing so well. And I think there has been some a sort of suggestion from investors is the valuations that we see in private markets just got too lofty? And then you get this rationalization effect when they come to market and public markets are going, hang on a second, I don't see the value that you do. I think that's a reasonable thing to sort of wonder at this stage.
So is the party over now for tech companies listing on Wall Street?
No, I just think we're going to recognise that we need to look at business models. We need to look at a path to profitability and perhaps where we are in the business cycle right now and closer to the end of the business cycle. You know, we want to see some path to profitability here. It's not okay just to continue to plough money in and not have an end game here.
We've been speaking to several analysts over the last few days about exactly that, about the profitability. Should we be looking at profitability in a different way? And should small to medium businesses actually be able to sell themselves better in terms of that path to profitability? And we're not really quite sure what the answer is yet. What questions are you asking in New York that might help us?
I think you need to know what your business is, quite frankly. Yeah. I think there's a concern with WeWork was a great example where, you know, we're a health company. We're going to open a school in New York. We're doing this. We're doing real estate. We're, you know, have a clear view on what your business is and present that to investors rather than trying to sell them 15 different ideas, because there's a sense that you're trying to mask what you aren't, perhaps more than what you are.
Your show is a year old. For the past, nearly 3 years now, we've had Donald Trump in the White House, and Wall Street's done really, really well under President Trump. We know that CNN as an organisation is not necessarily his most avid supporter, but what do you make of the Trump rally? A, is it a Trump rally or just a rally? And B, is it sustainable or is the S&P 500 overvalued at the moment?
You know, I speak to a lot of investors about this. And even when we saw, if you go back 2 years, people were saying that if we want to call it a battle of the uglies, the United States wins. There are a lot of challenged places in the world. China's slowing, Europe's struggling. I mean, we're talking about getting stimulus back there as well. I think Trump, to a larger extent, has promoted a pro-business agenda. And as much as you like to criticize the tax reform policy that we saw, it was good for business, and that's reflected in what we're seeing in the stock market in particular too, and the economy has performed pretty well.
One of the big story that we've been looking at every single day is Boeing, and asking, is Boeing too big to fail? What are you hearing?
That's a great question. I mean, if you look at their order book, their reliance on the MAX jets, they have to get this right. They
over 2,000 of them out.
Absolutely.
There.
They have to get this right. They have to get them back up in the air. It's interesting. I spoke to the Emirates CEO yesterday about this in particular. And it's for them, it's not just about MAX jets. It's about the 777Xs as well. They have 150 on order of those. And they've got engine problems there too. There's a number of issues that they have. But I think
not to mention the cracks in the wings on the older ones.
Right. Yeah. Communication, I think, here from a corporate perspective, the separation of the CEO and the chairman here and promoting an idea that there's going to be greater oversight. I think they relied in the past on a great reputation for safety, and now more questions are being asked. And that's right. When they get these jets up in the air, they can't get this wrong.
Let's talk about Brexit. We struggle here in Dubai, as British people, wondering how relevant it is to our audience 7 hours from London. And I guess you've got a similar situation in New York. You're British, you worked in the City of London as an investment banker for many years, but now you're in America, 7 hours away. Does anyone care about Brexit on Wall Street?
You know, I think from the perspective that I get from New York, people are pleased at times that other nations have troubles and concerns with understanding what's going on in politics right now. They don't feel like quite so crazy as everywhere else. It is relevant, I think, from a perspective that if we see a no-deal Brexit, there will be broader concerns about what the implications are. But I think everybody's numb, quite frankly. And I say that as a Brit, but I also say that as someone who watches the markets.
What stories are New Yorkers most concerned about?
We talk about US-China a lot.
Yeah.
What does this trade deal mean? Will there be a trade deal, a more fundamental trade deal? From my perspective, you break it down into two things, trade and technology and what the future looks like. And this comes back to the approach on Trump as well. Do I believe that Donald Trump is right and this White House is right to tackle China over intellectual property theft and patent protection? Absolutely. Was tariffs and trade the way to do that? The jury's out. Phase one right now suggests that we are going to see some kind of resolution, whether it's agricultural purchases and a suspension of further trade tariffs. Do we manage to tackle China on intellectual property theft and patent protection? Opening up of markets? Watch this space.
Newsmakers. The movers and shakers shaping your world.
Now, for newsmakers this morning, Brandy's off. She's a little bit under the weather today. She'll be back tomorrow. But handily, we have a replacement for Brandy in the studio this morning. Julia Chatterley is the anchor of CNN International's Wall Street coverage, and she's happily agreed to stay with
us. You thought you were irreplaceable, Brandy, didn't you?
Yeah. So, Julia, this is Newsmakers, where we look at, as its name suggests, some of the day's big newsmakers. And you, stroke, we have picked for you someone you've interviewed over the past year on your show on CNN, Alan Greenspan, former governor of the Federal Reserve. I'll ask you why you've picked him in a second. But first of all, this is a short clip of you speaking to Alan Greenspan.
Do you think we're still in a bull market, an equity bull market?
Not really. No, it's beginning to fumble. Mm. You can see it by reaction in recent days. It would be very surprising.
So Alan Greenspan was governor of the Fed, what, 20 years ago now? He's in his 90s. Why is he still relevant, Julia? Yeah,
he's interesting because he's watched a number of different business cycles. So he's got a real sense, I think, of how important the Federal Reserve is at some point. He pointed out the stock market there, and actually he said if we see a further rally and then a drop, run for cover, actually, was the statement that he made and was quite poignant at this moment. But he's also interesting, I think, from a perspective that we see right now. One, the importance of needing more stimulus and supporting the US economy, but economies around the world, and the importance of policy, whether it's monetary or fiscal or coming from the White House here, and the impact, the ripple effect that that has around the world. But also the pressure that we get from President Trump on the central bank in the United States right now, and the pressure that he says, look, you know, you're doing a bad job, Jay Powell, you should have rates lower, you should be providing more stimulus.
Do you think it's fair that Donald Trump is putting that pressure on Jay Powell?
Well, I think no White House, no leadership likes to see tight policy, particularly when they're one and a half years out from an election. But the idea that you have a White House that's politically trying to interfere with the central bank, it is uncomfortable, to say the least. Greenspan said, look, the way that the Federal Reserve is built, they wear big earmuffs. So they're not listening to that kind of pressure, and they will react based on what they see with the economy. But, you know, he's an interesting person for what he's seen, the times that he's seen, and the perspective that he gives, I think.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
One of our big talking points is the issue of email. New research out of the University of Sussex suggests that conventional wisdom may be wrong. Conventional wisdom says that the always-on culture, the 24/7 email culture, causes a lot of stress. But actually, the researchers at the University of Sussex say the opposite might be true. Being forced to ignore email out of work hours could in fact be causing stress.
Can we throw that question to Julia Chatterley of CNN, who's with us still in the studio? Would you rather have email there in the evenings or not?
My blood pressure's rising just thinking about not being able to check my emails in the evening. It would give me anxiety. I don't want to go into work and be faced with loads of emails that I could have perhaps dealt with the night before.
And you mentioned over the weekend, not being able to access your company.
No, it's giving me anxiety. I mean, you know, if my workforce wanted to do that, I guess, you know, my team wanted to do that. I don't think it works in news. I'm not sure it works in practice. No one's going to do that.
I bet it didn't work in an investment bank, did it?
You have to be kidding me.
Julia, we've taken enough of your time. Really appreciate this morning. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Julia Chatterley of CNN International, appreciate your time.
Thank you for
having me. Enjoy the rest of your time in Dubai.
Thanks very much indeed for listening. We're back tomorrow morning live on air from 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.